Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman is on assignment. Here's what we're looking at. President Trump once again considers sending the National Guard to Chicago. The latest on that and ramped up immigration enforcement.
I don't like him. He's incompetent. The Fed chairman's incompetent.
As Trump aims for more control over the Federal Reserve, the Fed kicks off meetings on whether to cut interest rates.
Brace yourself, because Chicago is sinking.
And it's happening without you even realizing it. But what's causing Chicago to sink? We explain. First off tonight, federal agents ramp up immigration enforcement efforts in Chicago, coinciding with Mexican Independence Day. Border Patrol Chief Gregory Bovino announced in a post on X this morning that the so-called Operation at Large is underway, touting that agents had already begun making arrests. Bovino says enforcement will also focus on suburbs with large immigrant populations, not just the city proper. Speaking at an unrelated event, Governor J.B. Pritzker slammed the crackdown, saying his family was lucky to be taken in by the United States at a time when Russia was targeting and killing Jews.
We had nothing and offered nothing except hard work, a desire to get ahead, a desire to be free and to live in a secure environment. We should not have our military, have our agencies of the federal government arresting people because they look different or because they speak with an accent or because they speak another language.
We'll have more on the latest wave of federal agents in Chicago in just a moment. The city should raise property taxes every year to keep pace with inflation. That's the major recommendation of a task force Mayor Brandon Johnson charged with finding solutions to Chicago's budget mess, including a forecasted gap of more than $1 billion next year. The interim report from the Chicago Financial Future Task Force identified up to $455 million in possible cuts and up to $1.65 billion in new revenue. The task force warns that without property tax increases tied to inflation, the city will be forced to slash services or raise other taxes. But Johnson says he doesn't agree with the proposal to hike property taxes.
One of the things that it's clear to note that the working group fully established that we do not have a spending problem in Chicago. We have a revenue challenge in Chicago. And that's an important conclusion that I believe was necessary for the people of Chicago to hear.
You can read the full report on our website. Chicago's Leo High School on the city's south side gets another moment in the spotlight. The boys' choir will again compete on America's Got Talent tonight as part of the competition's semifinals, where Leo will face off against 10 other acts. The group advanced to the semifinals last month after an a cappella performance of Imagine Dragons' Believer drawing raves from the judges. Voting begins at 7 o'clock tonight and runs through 7 a.m. tomorrow. Break a leg, guys. Up next, details of the latest immigration crackdown in Chicago.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
As we just heard, federal officials are ramping up immigration enforcement raids across Chicago today. It comes as President Donald Trump once again is vowing to send the National Guard to Chicago, prompting Governor J.B. Pritzker to fire back at the president.
I think he might be suffering from some dementia. And the next day he'll wake up on the other side of the bed and stop talking about Chicago. So I've never really counted on anything that he said as real.
Our Heather Sharone joins us now with more. Heather, two high-profile members of the Trump administration landed in Chicago today. They're signaling a new phase of their efforts to deport undocumented immigrants. What did it look like across the city today?
Well, Kristi Noem, Homeland Security Secretary, started her day very early in Elgin, where she helped raid a home where four men were detained. One of those men told reporters he was released after proving to agents that he is an American citizen. He's now left to pick up the pieces of his shattered house. Gregory Bovino with the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol also said he arrived in Chicago today with a social media video promising to deport who he called criminal illegal aliens. It is not clear what specifically he has been tasked with doing in Chicago. Since this new operation known as Midway Blitz began last week, we're not sure how many people have been detained, with some federal officials saying that 250 people have been detained, but only 30 people or so have been formally identified.
You mentioned there was a citizen caught up in this sweep, but you know, overall, what do we know about the people federal agents are detaining?
Not a whole lot. We heard from a spokesperson for the Homeland Security Department to say that they had targeted people who had been charged or convicted with DUI, felony stalking, and other violent crimes. But we know from U.S. ICE officials that most of the people who have been detained do not have criminal records, or if they do, they are essentially nonviolent offenses like traffic infractions.
And obviously, there's been a lot of back and forth on this, but you know, logistically, what does change if President Trump deploys the National Guard?
We simply don't know. We don't know what authority he will assert. We don't know what those troops will be tasked with doing. We do know, however, that Governor J.B. Pritzker will immediately ask a federal judge to block that deployment. That means everything is very uncertain.
You know, we've been discussing Governor Pritzker's reaction. Mayor Brandon Johnson also pushed back today against the Trump administration. He signed an executive order that he said was designed to protect Chicagoans' constitutional rights. What would that order do?
Well, the order that he signed today instructs the Chicago Police Department to intervene if federal officials prevent Chicagoans from exercising their First Amendment rights to speech and assembly by finding an alternate location for that protest to take place. We pressed the mayor on this at a press conference today. It's not exactly clear how that would work, especially if these protests turn chaotic and perhaps some unrest occurs. However, it's clear that the mayor wants the people of Chicago and Chicago to know he's doing everything he can to protect their constitutional rights.
All right, Heather Sharone, thanks very much.
Thanks, Nick.
And you can read more of our coverage about the National Guard threats and immigration enforcement efforts on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Investors are watching closely as the Federal Reserve kicks off a two-day meeting on whether to lower interest rates. The decision could have major ripple effects on the economy, and it comes against a backdrop of increased pressure from President Trump as he tries to gain more control over the Fed, calling on it to set lower interest rates and suggesting he could fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell. Just last night, an appeals court ruled Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook can remain on the board as Trump raced to unseat her before the start of today's meeting. Joining us with more are Martin Eichenbaum, professor of economics at the Weinberg College of Arts and Sciences at Northwestern University, and Philip Braun, clinical professor of finance at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Martin, I'd like to start with you. What do you expect to come out of this week's Fed meeting?
Judging by the markets and various other sources, I think it's reasonable to anticipate a decline in the interest rate. There's some question about how much. I would guess, but don't know. They would move gradually, so maybe 25 basis points for now, and perhaps signaling further changes in the future.
And why might the Fed choose to lower interest rates now?
Well, it's a great question. I think to understand the background, the Fed has a dual mandate, essentially, of keeping employment going and keeping inflation down. And they're constantly balancing that mix. So they're in a little bit of a bind, but it is true that the economy seems to be showing some signs of slowing. The labor data was not particularly strong and revisions were negative. So, and just anecdotally, things seem to be slowing down. Why is that a tough call then? Well, if you lower rates, you probably will boost growth in the economy, at least temporarily, but that will put further pressures on prices. The downside of all of this is that the Fed is still below its target level of inflation, which is about 2%, and we're roughly at 2.8%. And so they're in this terrible position of having to choose which of their goals they're going to give priority to.
Yeah, a little bit at loggerheads there. Philip Braun, do you think this is the right time to lower rates?
I would rather see the Fed stay steady at what they're doing right now until we get another month or two of inflation data, decide whether inflation is going dramatically up or it can be managed. So I think, as Martin said, a quarter point reduction in the Fed funds rate is not going to have that big of an effect. So it's sort of going to be a neutral outcome of the meeting. But no matter what the Federal Reserve does, whatever choice they make is both choices, keeping interest rates high, moving them low, have problems.
And how has the Federal Reserve approached setting interest rates in recent months? I mean, you know, we heard a bit about sort of all the different priorities they have to juggle.
They've been predominantly an inflation fighter and viewing that as their main goal for the time being. And now they're going to have to put both inflation fighter as well as a slow economy fighter on their palate at the same time.
Martin Eichenbaum, you know, there's been a lot of uncertainty with President Trump's sort of on-again, off-again tariff policies. Now that things have more or less settled, what kind of effects are we starting to see?
I think you're starting to see the effects of tariffs on various prices. It took a while for people to work down their inventories, but you're now seeing those price pressures. For many of the viewers, if they bought a cup of coffee recently, they've noticed the price of coffee's gone crazy. That's not unrelated to the tariffs that we put on Brazil and the fact that 50% of the coffee beans that we use come from Brazil. So that's starting to seep through in a broader context. A more general lesson, it seems to me, is that uncertainty is a bad thing. So if I'm a businessman, or person, I should say, and I'm deciding whether to invest more or less, uncertainty is going to make me much more cautious. And so I think this stop-go policy, it's not a policy, the stop-go way of proceeding has really hurt investment, and we're also seeing that in the data. So I think that's a significant contributor to the softening and the decline on the real side of the economy.
Yeah, even for folks who might not have a head for economics, coffee prices are an easy way into the question there. Philip Braun, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics found that the job market is much weaker than initially thought, with about 900 fewer jobs added in 2024 and 2025 than previously reported. What do you think is driving that?
I think this economic slowdown we're seeing didn't start just this year, right? It's been a slow process that's going on for a while now, and that's what they reflect. They don't reflect bias or anything like that. They simply reflect the way the world actually looked.
You know, Martin Eichenbaum, we know President Trump wants more control over the Fed, attempting to fire a member of its board of governors, and he's been putting pressure on the Fed to lower interest rates. What's your reaction to that kind of interference?
I think it's very dangerous. So let me say, I think the Fed should be held accountable for its policies, and it is. The chairman testifies before Congress. And all the governors are up for reappointment in a normal amount of time. I think history is pretty unkind to attempts to interfere with the independence of monetary policy. And I think just from an intuitive point of view, politicians often have a relatively short horizon. They're worried about the next election, often. And so they're always tempted to lower interest rates to goose the economy to achieve that objective. And history has taught us that when they do that, the result is often a lot of inflationary pressures. So, you know, Richard Nixon was famous for doing that with the then chairman, Arthur Burns, and the tapes are not pleasant to listen to, especially if you don't like bad language. That didn't turn out well. That didn't turn out well. But it's not just the United States. I think this is a worldwide phenomenon that when the politicians get their hands on monetary policy, they inevitably have a bias to the expansionary, to the point where it often causes inflation.
Philip Braun, same question to you. What do you make of this pressure from the executive branch?
I think it's very unfortunate. I mean, Trump knows less about monetary policy than he does about tariffs. But, you know, we've seen instances in very recent past in Argentina and Turkey of inflation going above 50%, and in Argentina at one point almost 300%. And this is caused by politicians worrying about their spending ability and printing money purely to spend it rather than managing the money supply simultaneously. So it'll be a disaster if Trump gets control of the Fed and pushes interest rates rapidly down.
We've got about 20 seconds left, but, you know, Martin Eichenbaum, what's your overall outlook on what people should expect from the economy over the course of the year?
Well, I think, like many people, and in particular people in the private sector, there is a lot of uncertainty about the look forward. And if you look at indices of uncertainty, they're at record levels. Various economists put together levels of indices. That said, I do think we're slowing down, and I don't think inflation is coming down as quickly as the Fed would like it to. And so if you ask me, what do I think inflation is going to be over the next year? Probably about what it is now, which is 2.8%. And that is above the Fed's stated target of 2%, and it's hurting a lot of people.
All right. Well, there's much more we could cover here, but unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this evening. Martin Eichenbaum, Philip Braun, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Up next, Chicago is sinking. We explore why that is and what can be done about it. Something's happening in the city, and you probably don't know it. Now, it has to do with the ground under your feet, but you can't feel it. And while it may be happening slowly, the consequences could be huge. Okay, are you intrigued? WTTW News fellow Abana Bidiako explains.
Attention Chicagoans, brace yourself, because Chicago is sinking. Yes, you heard right, sinking. The more sciencey name is land subsidence, but whatever you call it, the city is descending by more than 2 millimeters each year. That's about a 16th of an inch. To get to the bottom of the matter, you need to rewind 20,000 years when a glacier covered the entire city. The weight of the ice caused downward motion, and when it was gone, a rebound, deforming the Earth's crust as well as helping create our clay-based soil. Fast forward to today. We all know about climate change, but Northwestern researchers were the first to study underground climate change and its effects on urban infrastructure. They call it a silent hazard. They install temperature sensors around the city, including below ground. Turns out, the layers of clay under Chicago are deforming over time due to the rising underground temperatures. In fact, Northwestern says the underground temps in parts of Chicago have risen 27 degrees since the 1950s. The culprit? Buildings, transportation systems, and other infrastructure creating heat that stays underground. Open space allows the ground to breathe a bit, so the hottest temps are under streets, sidewalks, and buildings. We've got a lot of those. A study of 28 cities revealed at least 20% of the land in every one of them is sinking, and most have 65% or more subsiding. Those researchers cite groundwater extraction and expanded urban development as additional contributing factors and warn that even slight downward shifts in land can significantly compromise the structural integrity of buildings, roads, bridges, and railways over time. So what's to be done? Scientists recommend increasing energy efficiency and reusing so-called heat waste on the surface before it travels underground, for a start. It looks like action today may save future generations of Chicagoans from living in a hole in the ground, or at least from having their buildings fall down.
You can watch more of our Emmy-winning WTTW News Explains videos on our website. Now, land subsidence was once thought to be a mainly coastal phenomenon, but as we just heard, it's showing up in most major cities across the U.S. and many around the world. Scientists say this so-called slow-moving hazard means Chicago's urban center is losing around 2 millimeters of elevation every year. So just how serious is this problem, and what can be done about it? Joining us with more is Manoushir Shirzai, associate professor in the Department of Geosciences at Virginia Tech, co-author of one of the studies referenced in our explainer. Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it. A lot of people might be surprised to hear that Chicago is extracting groundwater, given that we live next to the world's largest freshwater source. But why is groundwater extraction making Chicago vulnerable?
Thanks for having me. So groundwater extraction, when it happens, it causes porous spaces underground to become empty. So water droplets holding the land above them. When we extract them, those empty spaces cannot hold the weight of the material above them and begin to collapse. As a result of those collapse, aquifer system compacts, which manifests itself in land subsidence on the surface, as we measured using revolutionary satellite technology that we developed in our lab.
So we also heard in that video, Northwestern researchers identified underground climate change as another issue. How does that compound the problems that you identified with groundwater extraction?
Change in the temperature under the ground causes some layers, particularly clay, to deform, to become ductile, flow and also compact. So that effect would add to the effect of the aquifer compaction and exacerbate the land subsidence at the surface.
So kind of two problems we're dealing with at once. Now in a May 2025 paper, you and your co-authors found that Chicago was among a group of cities where about 98% of their area was affected by subsidence. And Chicago was one of five cities where at least 10% of their area is sinking at a higher rate, at more than 3 millimeters per year. What makes these cities, including Chicago, especially vulnerable?
So what drives that land subsidence is a combination of the factor, as you mentioned in your video at the beginning. So land subsidence caused by groundwater extraction, compaction of the clay layer, but also glacial isostatic adjustment. The immediate impact of land subsidence might be increased flooding risk to the Chicago and part of the city that can get flooded during the rain, but also storms. The other impact that land subsidence has, particularly if it's not even, so we call it differential land subsidence, meaning the rate of sinking at 2 points adjacent to each other is different. So when we have such a differential movement, it would impact any kind of infrastructure that we have, mainly linear infrastructure, roads, railways, pipelines, but also foundation of the building can be affected by that. And if it's not remedied, if it's not stopped, over the course of years, can cause major damage to infrastructure that amount to significant amount of dollars that's needed to be to fix and repair those infrastructures.
There are some pretty striking graphics included in the paper. One of them that we have up here, shows Chicago next to Phoenix and Philadelphia. The redder it is, the more land is sinking. But in this graphic, it shows that virtually all of metropolitan Chicago is sinking, whereas in other cities, the effects are more concentrated in certain areas. Why is that?
So Chicago has been experiencing a lot of groundwater extraction, but most of that has stopped over a few decades ago. So as a result of that massive groundwater extraction that started in 1860 and lasted almost 100 years, aquifers are compacting. Even when we stop extracting the groundwater, there is something called residual compaction, which is the gradual compaction of the aquifer that continues over decades after. And that usually has a gradual, and we call it long wavelength effect, to impact majority of the Chicago metro more or less at the same rate. That compounded with the effect of the GIA, glacial isostatic adjustment that you explained earlier, together creates long wavelengths deformation or land subsidence that affect majority of the Chicago at very similar rate as we showed in our study.
You know, 2 or 3 millimeters a year might not seem drastic, but that can be an inch every 12 to 16 years. We've got about 30 seconds left, but what are some of the mitigation strategies cities like Chicago can use?
So one of the very effective mitigation strategy is to use managed aquifer recharge. So, and that's an engineering solution in that we use excess water when we have it. For example, during the wet season, we treat the water minimally and we inject it under the ground. We fill the porous spaces. In this way, we save the water for when we need it, but also we recover and compensate the land elevation loss. And in many cases, we were managed to stop the land subsidence.
All right. Well, it might not be something everybody is thinking about, but certainly an important issue to draw their attention to. Manoush Shirzai, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports inclusionary excellence throughout the legal profession.